It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
The United States says it has dealt a significant blow to the Islamic State militant group in Iraq. And U.S. President Obama urges Egypt's leader to do more to fulfill the aspirations of Egyptians. I'm Michael Lippin. A U.S. official says three top Islamic State leaders have been killed in a series of targeted airstrikes in Iraq between mid-November and early December. The official said Thursday the airstrikes will reduce the militant group's ability to command and control areas that it occupies in Iraq and neighboring Syria. The targeted Islamic State officials were identified as the deputy to IS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the group's military emir in Iraq, and a mid-level IS militant serving as emir of the northern Iraqi city of Mosul. U.S. military officials also said the Islamic State's ability to operate in Iraq has been significantly affected by a U.S.-led campaign of more than 1,300 airstrikes and by the strengthening of Iraqi government security forces. But a senior U.S. commander also said the fight against IS is far from over and that it could take 3 years or more to defeat the militants. Well, U.S. President Barack Obama has urged his Egyptian counterpart, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, to invest in the aspirations of the Egyptian people. The White House says Mr. Obama made the appeal in a phone conversation with Mr. Sisi on Thursday. It said the U.S. president expressed concern about mass trials in Egypt, as well as the government's continued imprisonment of journalists and peaceful activists, and its treatment of non-governmental organizations. Hundreds of Egyptian Islamist opposition activists have been sentenced to death in speedy trials in the past year. A number of journalists also have been serving lengthy prison terms in the country. You're listening to VOA News. A White House spokesman says it is possible that Cuban President Raul Castro could someday visit the White House to meet with President Obama. On Wednesday, Mr. Obama and Mr. Castro announced a deal to normalize relations between their countries after half a century of hostility that grew out of the Cold War. As part of that normalization, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs, Roberta Jacobson, will hold high-level talks with the Cuban government in Havana next month. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins has more.
Assistant Secretary Jacobson says she will travel to Havana for the talks, which she expects will take place in late January. She says a meeting that was originally a periodic review of Cuba-U.S. migration will now include talks on restoring diplomatic relations. She says the first step in the process has already occurred. The U.S. and Cuba have agreed to begin the work on restoring ties.
We can do that via an exchange of letters or of notes. It doesn't require a formal sort of legal treaty or agreement.
She says U.S. diplomats in Cuba would transition from being under Swiss protection.
It requires us also terminating the 53-year agreement that we've had with the Swiss government as our protecting power. And the same for the Cubans.
Also, the U.S. will begin a review of Cuba's designation as a state sponsor of terrorism. Pam Dawkins, VOA News, the State Department.
The White House says U.S. officials are treating a cyber attack on movie studio Sony Pictures as a serious national security matter. White House spokesman Josh Earnest said Thursday the U.S. National Security Council is considering a proportionate response to the cyber attack, which he said appears to have been carried out by a sophisticated actor. The hackers have said they were retaliating for Sony's production and planned release of a movie about a fictional plot to assassinate North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. They also have threatened to carry out physical attacks against any theaters that screen the film, The Interview, prompting Sony to scrap plans to release it on December 25th. A Pakistani court has granted bail to a man accused of orchestrating the 2008 Mumbai terrorist attacks that killed 166 people in India's financial center. The Pakistani court's decision drew harsh criticism from Indian officials. A Pakistani prosecutor said the accused mastermind of the Mumbai attacks, Zaki-ur-Rehman Lakhvi, was granted bail on Thursday. Lakhvi is a senior commander of the Pakistan-based militant group Lashkar-e-Taiba. India's External Affairs Ministry said granting of bail to Lakhvi will serve as a reassurance to terrorists. I'm Michael Lippin, reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, sitting in for the vacationing James Batty. Today is Friday, December 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambia's main opposition leader says he is ready to officially launch his campaign today, Friday, ahead of the general presidential by-election.
We start the campaigns tomorrow. I'm going to file in the nominations on Saturday, and I'm going to have my first rally in the northern province in Kasama on Sunday afternoon.
Nervous Mumba is the newly confirmed leader of Zambia's main opposition movement for multi-party democracy, MMD. Zimbabwe's main opposition leader, Morgan Tsvangirai, predicts electoral defeat for President Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF party. And Nigeria's opposition calls on the government to do more to improve security following Boko Haram's latest attack.
We said before that if you do not equip your army adequately, if you do not motivate your army adequately, you can't expect them to lay their lives down, to be slaughtered.
That's Lai Mohammed, spokesman for Nigeria's Opposition All Progressives Congress, or APC. South Sudan's government is displeased with the European Union's calls to impose an international arms embargo on the world's youngest nation. And peacekeepers begin vetting prospective soldiers for the Central African Republic's National Army. Those stories plus Mark Ome's sport and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The newly confirmed leader of Zambia's main opposition movement for multi-party democracy, MMD, says he will officially launch a nationwide campaign today, Friday, in the run-up to the January presidential by-election. Nervous Mumba was declared the MMD's de facto presidential candidate by Zambia's Supreme Court Thursday. Mumba was suspended as leader of the MMD after senior party executives replaced him with former President Rupia Banda as presidential candidate for the party. He told me that he was right to challenge his suspension from the party.
I always knew, our team was always aware, that if we stayed true to our constitutional provisions, we would emerge victorious. And it has been our position that anything that abrogates or be seen to be abrogating our constitution will not be entertained, firstly, by Zambians, and then secondly, by the judiciary. And our prediction has come to pass today that, they have vindicated us. That I am the duly elected president of the Movement for Multi-Party Democracy, and therefore the substantive candidate for this coming by-election. I'm very happy with the ruling, and we commend the judiciary for being magnanimous in doing what they have done.
What is next after this ruling? You have a few weeks to campaign nationwide for this presidential by-election. What's next for you?
Well, firstly, my immediate challenge or message is to all our members that it was unfortunate that we spent so much time trying to deal with this matter. But now that it is concluded, I've called all members from all our provinces to concentrate on uniting the party and mobilizing membership and campaigning that we win this coming election. I think that I'm very happy with the attention that this case has received right across the country. A lot of people in Zambia felt there was a big injustice that had been done against myself, and that I had been mistreated by a group of people that had wanted to hijack the presidency midway.
Does that mean that from Friday you officially begin campaigning as the presidential, substantive presidential candidate of the MMD ahead of the by-election?
Yes, we start the campaigns tomorrow. I'm going to file in the nominations on Saturday, and I'm going to have my first rally in the northern province in Kasama on Sunday afternoon. So from there, we are going to have a non-stop campaign until 20th of January. So yes, we are hitting the road running, and we don't believe we are late. I think that there's a lot going for us, and we're going to take advantage of our previous engagement as vice president and also somebody who has gone across this country so many times.
What do you think your chances are ahead of this presidential by-election in January 20?
Well, I think that our chances are extremely high and good. I think like anybody else that is contesting, we are putting in our very best. Some of our colleagues started before us, but that doesn't mean that we are not going to overtake them. And so I'm very confident that moving forward, we are going to put up our spirited campaign, and I expect victory on the 20th of January.
Nevis Mumba is the newly confirmed leader of Zambia's main opposition movement for multi-party democracy, or MMD. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Zimbabwe's main opposition leader, Morgan Tsvangirai, of the Movement for Democratic Change, or MDC, says President Robert Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF is on its way out of power. The former prime minister cited recent fissures in the once solid party as the reason for his statement. VOA Studio 7's Blessing Zulu spoke with Tsvangirai and first asked him about the state of his own party following its national congress in October.
One would describe the post-congress situation in the party as robust, a new sense of direction, and an accomplishment under very adverse conditions. I must add that this was a unique congress in that it was not just about elections, unlike Blower Congress. This one was about discussing real issues that affect the party, the institutional reform, the policy direction, the roadmap to the next elections, and the various policy measures that will define this party as a party for change. And so I think there's a high degree of confidence amongst the MDC supporters.
You also appointed a new executive. Can you tell us what they are going to be doing?
I did not appoint the executive. You know, in terms of the constitution, every province submits three names to the national executive, and that the president appoints 15 members to that national executive, which then fully constitutes that organ. That's what we have done. We have also proceeded to appoint various committees. We have the executive committees that will be looking internally in the party, administration and finance, discipline and elections, and also party building directorate, which looks at the broader party building challenges. Then, you've got the legal one, which is also assisting the internal. Then you've got portfolio committees, which are committees in the executive, mainly for policy articulation by various secretaries, and those I have also appointed.
How are they going to make a difference in the lives of Zimbabweans? Of course, we know that you are in the opposition.
The opposition can never make any difference. You must understand that the responsibility, the reason why people seek mandate, legitimate or illegitimate mandate from the people, is they want to implement their program. For us in the MDC, we are hoping that when we're given a chance and a mandate to run the country, we'll then implement our very broad-based, people-oriented policy program and agenda.
Of course, we cannot expect you to mourn more than the bereaved. But what is your take on what is happening in ZANU-PF?
It's total confusion. The party is fractured. It's irreconcilable differences. There has been a purge in that party, which I think will exacerbate the situation. It's too acrimonious, and I don't foresee any revival of ZANU-PF to its previous self.
Morgan Tsvangirai is Zimbabwe's main opposition leader. He spoke with VOA Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from the capital, Harare. The spokesman for Nigeria's main opposition All Progressives Congress, or APC, says the government has failed to implement effective measures to protect civilians. Spokesman Lai Mohammed's comment came after suspected Boko Haram militants kidnapped more than 100 women and children and killed 35 other people Sunday during a raid on Gumsuri village in northern Nigeria. Mohammed told me that the government has refused repeated calls by the APC to negotiate with Boko Haram to bring an end to the security threat.
You see, we condemn the Boko Haram, you know, insurgents and the activities, and there's absolutely no justification for it. And we've said it several times, and we will not tolerate terrorism. However, we still insist that this government is not doing enough to stem the tide of Boko Haram insurgents. We say once again that this government seems to be completely clueless. We've told government that it's nearly impossible in all cases of, you know, insurgencies or terrorism to use just the military option. Military option alone cannot solve the problem.
Some military personnel, death penalty has been imposed on them. What is your reaction to this? Because one of the charges is that they failed or refused to fight Boko Haram element in places where they were posted.
Well, it's a very delicate matter. On a more general note, we said before that if you do not equip your army adequately, if you do not motivate your army adequately, clear from the reports we've had, and even from some confessions of some soldiers, that all is not well within the military, and we don't have the well without, you know, to fight the terrorists. That it's not that they are running away, but that they're not giving enough equipment, they're not giving enough ammunition, and little attention is even paid to their welfare.
Your presidential candidate, General Muhammad Buhari, has chosen his running mate. Some people are saying it's a right combination to win the presidency next year. Others are saying, well, since he has been defeated before, he will be defeated again. What say you?
You see, today we have a team of Muhammad Buhari and Professor Shibaju, which is time integrity and excellence, combination of both. And I don't think there's any better team in Nigeria today. Those who say he has run before and been defeated, and as such, he will be defeated this time around, they have forgotten three basic things. One, General Buhari has never run on the platform of a major national political party as this. Two, at no time in the history of this country has a government gone into election so totally and utterly discredited and unpopular.
Lai Mohammed is spokesman for Nigeria's main opposition, All Progressives Congress, or APC. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Peter Clote in Washington. Today is Friday, December 19th. Please send your comment and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Ahead on our program, Mark Omer Sports and our listener of the day. South Sudan is reacting negatively to a European Union recommendation to impose an international arms embargo on Juba. Earlier this week, the EU called for the international embargo as a strategy to push the government and rebel leaders to end the conflict. The EU already has its own arms embargo against South Sudan, a holdover from an embargo placed on all of Sudan during the civil war. From Juba, Philip Thorn Aliu has this report for VOA.
The head of the EU delegation in Juba, Stefano De Loa, says the call for an international arms embargo is in the interest of South Sudanese people. However, Foreign Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin says the government has not increased weapons purchase since the fighting began, and there is no basis for an arms embargo.
We believe it is ill-advised for people to speak of an arms embargo on the Republic of South Sudan, because we are not engaging, fighting any war with any country. But the sovereignty of this country has to be protected. It is a country which is facing rebellion, and it is the right of the government and the people of this country to be able to defend their territory.
The European Union foreign ministers called on the international community to consider the adoption of an arms embargo if necessary to help the peace process.
Stefano De Loa says the EU thinks collective action against South Sudan's leaders is necessary to end what he says is the suffering that has been inflicted on the South Sudanese people over the past year. He says the EU believes Juba is still buying more weapons and that these purchases need to be stopped so that the nation's resources can be directed to humanitarian needs, such as medical supplies, clean water, and food.
More arms, more violence. The less arms are in the country, the less violence is to be foreseen. What is important to say in this point is that these restrictive measures have to be taken only against those people or institutions that are creating obstacles to the negotiations or who are violating the cessation of hostilities. It's not a measure that has to be taken, but if necessary, if the peace process is not going on, notwithstanding the goodwill, something has to happen to stop violence.
In July, the EU imposed targeted sanctions on two military officers on both sides of the conflict. Foreign Minister Mariar says more sanctions are not possible. He spoke to reporters today at the airport as he returned from Moscow, where he delivered a letter from President Kiir to the Russian President Vladimir Putin. Mariar says South Sudan's government is getting international backing.
We discussed specifically the issue of sanctions, which is being talked about, and we were assured by the Russian Federation Minister of Foreign Affairs that Russia will not support any sanctions against the Republic of South Sudan. I think this is an important step that the Russian Federation has taken, and that they will also work hard to see that peace comes to the Republic of South Sudan.
As IGAD-mediated talks resume today in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, Mariar says the government is committed to ending the fighting. For VOA News, I am Philip.
International peacekeepers in the Central African Republic have started vetting the fractured nation's army, known as FACA, to try to exclude suspected criminals. The mission is starting with the 1st Battalion to be deployed on active service as part of rebuilding the country. For VOA, Nick Long in Bangui reports.
The French military mission known as Operation Sangaris is working with the UN mission MINUSCA and with the national authorities to screen each soldier in the 1st FACA battalion. The goal is to ensure that none of them have committed human rights violations. The FACA fell apart during the civil conflict over the past 2 years. Many soldiers joined the mostly Muslim ex-Seleka rebels and the mostly Christian anti-Balaka militias, both of which have carried out massacres and committed many other abuses. The new battalion is the first that will be deployed on active service, and it's being vetted this month. So far, 300 men are being screened, with another 200 to be vetted next month, bringing the battalion up to full strength. VOA asked the senior French officer overseeing the process, Colonel Charles Michel, how it works.
Aujourd'hui, le système judiciaire centrafricain est pour le moins désorganisé.
At the moment, he says, the Central African judicial system is disorganized. So the verification is based on, first, declarations by the soldiers themselves that they have not committed crimes or violations of international humanitarian law and that they will serve the nation well. That is not the only basis for inclusion in the battalion, however. Each soldier is interviewed by a board of Sangaris, MINUSCA and national authorities. And the peacekeepers check each soldier against their own intelligence on war criminals and rights abusers.
On a exclu un certain nombre. Sur la première compagnie, on était à un pourcentage de 2%.
The colonel says 2% of the men screened so far have been excluded on suspicion of human rights violations. It's been decided that the battalion will be based in the capital, Bangui, and its job will be to guard sites of vital national interest, probably including the presidency and the port on the river Ubangi, says Michel.
Avant toute chose, ces points d'intérêt vitaux comme ces listes doivent maintenant être validées.
The colonel says the list of these sites of vital national interest will be agreed by a committee consisting of international forces and government representatives. There is plenty more work to do before the Central African Army is fully screened and ready to operate to capacity. Michel says there's still great uncertainty as to the army's size, for example.
Il y a un gros travail aujourd'hui de l'ONU sur cette question de l'effectif. L'ONU
a. He says the UN is doing a lot of work to verify the number of FACA personnel, and it has mandated a non-governmental organisation, the Swiss Demining Federation, to create a database which will allow for better management of the FACA's human resources. Officially, there are supposed to be about 7,000 FACA personnel whose salaries are paid out of donor funding. The colonel did not mention that any soldiers were excluded as underage. The UN Children's Fund says the number of underage combatants in the CAR's armed groups has risen in the past 2 years from 2,500 to between 6,000 and 10,000. Nick Long for VOA News, Bangui.
A It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma reporting from Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Peter. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Tunisia's Club Africans beat Angolan defending champions Primeiro de Agosto 79-69 in quarterfinal action at the Africa Men's Basketball Club Championships in the Tunisian capital Tunis on Thursday. In other quarterfinals, Egypt's Sporting Alexandria outplayed Tunisia's US Monastir 74-57, Angola's Libolo dismissed the Democratic Republic of Congo's Mazembe 82-49, and Tunisia's ES Rades beat Mayotte Island's Mtapere 106-76. In a classification tie, Equatorial Guinea's Malabo Kings beat Ivory Coast's Abidjan Basketball Club 86-74. Turning to football, Rwanda's Amavubi are the world's most improved national team, according to the FIFA rankings released in Zurich, Switzerland on Thursday. Ivory Coast and the Seychelles jointly slipped by the widest margin among African countries. Algeria's Desert Fox are 18th and are the highest placed Africans on the FIFA rankings. Tunisia is 22nd, Ivory Coast 28th, Senegal 35th, Ghana 37th, Guinea 39th, followed immediately by Cape Verde Islands. Cameroon is 40th, African champions Nigeria are 43rd and Zambia 46th. Meanwhile, Rwanda's Amavubi are 68th and thus have soared to their highest placement in the FIFA rankings since independence. Emboldened by this achievement, Rwanda hosts their neighbors Burundi in a friendly match in Kigali tomorrow Saturday. In Morocco, Spain's Real Madrid and Argentina's tournament debutants San Lorenzo clash in the FIFA Club World Cup finals in Marrakesh tomorrow Saturday. Prior to the finals, Mexico's Cruz Azul and New Zealand Auckland City face off in the bronze medal playoff at the same venue. In Egypt, defending champions Ivory Coast get to know their preliminary round opponents when the Confederation of African Football stage the draw for the Orange Africa Under-17 Championships in Cairo on Sunday. Other teams in the draw are Cameroon, Guinea, Mali, hosts Niger, South Africa, Zambia, along with FIFA Under-17 World Cup champions Nigeria Golden Eaglets. Staying in Cairo, hosts Senegal are vying to replace African champions Egypt, who failed to qualify for the Africa Under-20 Championship. Others in Sunday's draw are Ghana, Republic of Congo, Ivory Coast, Mali, Nigeria, South Africa, and Zambia. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, Peter, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good weekend, and we'll see you on Monday. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, December 19.
In the interest of a common man, we urge the Nigerian government and her civil servants to resolve their differences for the purpose of justice and equity. How can the health workers be on strike, the radio and television union on strike, and the petroleum tanker driver on strike at the same time? Very unfair. I am Prince John Ishir.
Thank you, listener, for your comment. Please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. And that's it for this Friday, December 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporter Ricky Shryock, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, I'm Peter Clotte in Washington wishing you a good weekend. Stay tuned for International Edition next on The Voice of America.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
All day, all night.